This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm David Salkeld. Tony took the week off this week, recovering from the Democratic and Republican conventions, and in preparation for this year's Values Voters Summit. Now, if you haven't signed up to join us September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C., you still have time. Just head on over to TonyPerkins.com and you'll find the link to register. On Monday of this week, First Liberty Institute Senior Counsel and frequent Washington Watch Live guest host Ken Klukowski was joined by theologian Dr. Wayne Grudem to discuss Dr. Grudem's column on voting. Here now is that interview with Ken Klukowski and Dr. Wayne Grudem.
I was just floored by your piece this week, talking about your perspective on why you are voting for Donald Trump, and that you expressed that you understood that there are many observant Christians in this country that are struggling with that issue. It's a great piece. I'd recommend it to all of our listeners. Give us what you consider the number one takeaway in terms of how Christians in America today should be looking at this issue.
Well, Ken, let me say, if listeners want to see this, it is at townhall.com, under the columnist, and it's called Why Voting for Donald Trump is a Morally Good Choice. And I wrote it to say Trump is a flawed candidate. He's bombastic, he's brash, he insults people, and some other things that I list, but there's nothing wrong with voting for a flawed candidate if you think he'll do more good for the nation than his opponent, and I think it's unquestionably true that he will. Like you, I did not support him in the primaries. I supported another candidate, and then when that one dropped out, I supported yet another one. But now he has won, and I don't think we have any choice. And so I'm encouraging people to vote for Trump because if people don't vote or vote for a third-party candidate, it means Hillary has one less vote that she needs to win. And so it's really helping Hillary, and that'll bring in the permanent triumph of political liberalism and all the big government tax and spend, pro-abortion, pro-gender confusion government that she represents. Because she'll appoint a replacement for Justice Scalia on the Supreme Court. But wait a minute, not just Scalia. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is 83. She's had pancreas cancer, colon cancer, and she has a heart stent. And Justice Kennedy is 80 and Breyer is 78. They're not going to live forever. She could appoint 2, 3, 4 justices on the Supreme Court and lock in a liberal majority for 30 years to come. And then they would rule on every issue. Just at the break here where I was waiting to come on, I heard that a federal judge in North Carolina is taking his time to decide whether people in North Carolina have to allow transgender people into opposite-sex bathrooms from the biological sex of the person who claims to be transgender.
Yes, that's correct. I'm one of the consulting attorneys on that case, in fact. And,
wow,
and yes, you are describing it correctly.
You know better than I do that every single issue in the country can be somehow or another brought to the court. And if you get a solidly liberal 5-4, 6-3, 7-2 Supreme Court, there would be nothing that conservatives in legislatures or Congress or the presidency or governorships could do, because all of their laws would be overturned by that liberal court system, and then that's the end of the story.
So, and folks, I'd like to hit this on two levels with Dr. Grudem. First of all of you, check out townhall.com and see how he unpacks this. And I think I'll do a write-up on Breitbart News as well, linking back to his main pieces, as he talks about Christian business owners. Of course, as many of you, our listeners, are aware, I'm the attorney for Aaron and Melissa Klein, the Oregon Bakers, who are being persecuted by the government there in Oregon for declining to bake a same-sex wedding cake. Of course, you also mentioned other religious owners here. You talk about abortion, talk about religious liberty in the case. You're talking about Christian schools and colleges and even churches themselves and in freedom of speech. And I think critically important also, criminalizing dissent. I love your focus, because I've been talking about this a lot myself, Dr. Grudem, on the focus on the Supreme Court, and of course saying that myself as someone who practices before the high court.
I think what I'm worried about is, very concerned about, is that just as florists and bakers and photographers and pharmacists are being forced out of their occupation,
yes,
so in one career after another, a very liberal Supreme Court and lower court system could force Christians out of basically hundreds of thousands of jobs because their professions would be unsuitable for them. They would not allow them to continue if they didn't agree with the homosexual agenda. And that would result in the marginalization of Christians to the fringes of society. I do not think that is an unreasonable threat. And a recent Supreme Court minority view, a dissent with regard to the acceptance of a pharmacy case, Justice Alito said...
Right, the Stormans case out of Washington State.
Freedom. Yeah.
Yes, and as I tell people, those who say, well, look, I'm going to vote against Trump this time, and then in 4 years later, hopefully the country will learn its lesson, and 4 years later we can get a real conservative in there.
No,
yeah, I come back saying, people, when you're talking about the Supreme Court, given that there will probably be three vacancies and possibly more, you're not just talking about the 4 years, you're talking about the next 40 years. And and I do not know if our form of government, especially for observant Christians, can endure, a whole generation of what would be the most liberal Supreme Court in all of American history.
No, it can't, Ken, because it would distort the purpose of the court. So they're no longer just interpreting laws, but they're making laws, and I'm trying to think of a good analogy. It's something like a player saying, well, I'm going to not do my best in the Super Bowl because I'm going to prove my point to the coach that he should have done this play differently or should have put me in a different play. And then he'll know next year when we get to the Super Bowl that he should play according to my idea. Once you're at the Super Bowl, it's all over. And the Supreme Court is the Super Bowl. I don't know.
And I think so many people, Dr. Grudem, I think don't understand that there's really two fundamentally different visions in the judiciary as to what the job of a judge is. That on the right of center, there are those who believe that they are bound to just examine the text, history, and structure of any legal text, whether it's a contract, a statute, or a provision in the Constitution, and that their job is just to apply that. That's right. As opposed to the view on the left, which is that judges are, according to a liberal philosophy, are supposed to use their own enlightened, educated perspective as a check on democracy.
You can find out more about Dr. Wayne Grudem, including links to his articles, when you visit tonyperkins.com. When we return, Matt Staver, chairman of Liberty Counsel, joins us to talk about Alabama Chief Justice Roy Moore. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch.
What's at stake at this election? A lot. From the freedom to publicly practice and proclaim your faith, to the nomination of Supreme Court justices, matters of critical importance to Christians are looming in the days ahead. Family Research Council and FRC Action stand at the forefront of this battle. In these turbulent times, we trust in God's Word that He is for us and that He will give us a future and a hope of prosperity. That's why we invite you to join us on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. for the Values Voter Summit. Come to learn, be encouraged, and meet others who will stand for the renewal of this great nation. You'll hear the latest on the threats to our nation's security, your religious freedom, the privacy and safety of our children and grandchildren, and much more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to register. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
The family is the heart of our economy. It is the greatest generator of knowledge, attitudes, skills, and habits of the individual, and is a generator of financial savings and capital. The vast majority of small businesses begin as family businesses, which eventually become the large businesses of the nation. Families are thus the great generators of business, and they are affected profoundly by the tax code. What Washington does to the family budget has a direct effect on the well-being of millions of moms, dads, and children. Given the importance of family economic well-being and the sluggishness of economic growth, Family Research Council proposes 5 short-term but productive actions that federal policymakers can take to help moms and dads better provide for their children through tax reform. To learn more about our family-friendly tax proposals, visit frc.org/taxes. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Thursday of this week, radio host Janet Mefford sat in for Tony, and for the next 2 segments of our show, Janet will be talking with Matt Staver. Matt is the founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel, which is an international nonprofit litigation, education, and policy organization dedicated to advancing religious freedom, the sanctity of human life, and the family. Here's how Janet got the conversation started with Matt Staver.
Today, a federal judge dismissed a lawsuit that was brought by Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore. Justice Moore, as you may recall, was suspended from the bench back in May after the Alabama Judicial Inquiry Commission filed judicial ethics charges against him pertaining to an administrative order to probate judges. Justice Moore was trying to overturn that suspension, but he never ordered the probate judges to disregard the Obergefell decision, as this commission is claiming, and he's going to go before the Judicial Inquiry Commission in a hearing on Monday addressing these charges against him. I know there are a lot of moving parts to this case, but it is a critical case for Christians to understand and to follow closely, especially because the Southern Poverty Law Center also plays a part in what has been going on. So we're going to get more details now from Justice Moore's attorney, Matt Staver, who is founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. And Matt, it's great to have you here. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Janet, and you did an excellent job overviewing this because there are 2 different tracks that are going on simultaneously, and you got it exactly right.
Oh, well, that's good to know. Wiping the sweat from my brow, Matt, because it is complicated, and a lot of people say, all right, I know Justice Moore, I remember the Ten Commandments monument, and I know he's been a stalwart defender of marriage and will stand up for the right thing, but what is the latest thing here? Tell us a little bit about what's been going on with this lawsuit dismissal, stemming back to what has happened with this commission.
Yeah, let me just talk about what happened today. You got a federal court decision that abstained from hearing the matter. Now, the matter that was before the federal court is very limited. It's not the underlying charge. It's this automatic removal provision that Alabama has. It's the only state in the country that has this. And that is, when a judge is charged with, no matter what the charge is, no matter how trivial, that judge is automatically removed from the bench.
Wow.
And you're removed from the bench until you go through the hearing and you ultimately prevail. Now, there's history where a previous judge in a completely different situation, had been charged. He got removed from the bench. His case dragged on for 2 years, and he finally decided to just simply retire. I mean, this changes the whole judiciary and essentially says that you're guilty until proven innocent. So on Friday afternoon, he got the charge. On Monday, he's removed from the bench. It's very disruptive. So the complaint that we filed in the federal court was to strike down that automatic removal provision. I can tell you what, we are still pursuing that with another justice who also has a complaint filed against him, not a charge, but a complaint by the same Southern Poverty Law Center for a comment that he made on a radio program critical of the Obergefell decision of its legal reasoning. They filed the complaint. Now, the charge hasn't been filed, but if the charge is filed, he'll also be automatically removed. So we have a separate charge, separate complaint in court. It's not going to have this what they call abstention doctrine, where the federal court gives deference to an ongoing state proceeding, as in this case. The other case doesn't have an ongoing state proceeding with this other associate justice. So we're planning to get that removed at some point in the time.
Okay.
Now, what we're also doing is on Monday, we're going to the state court, the Court of the Judiciary, to challenge the underlying charges that was brought by the Judicial Inquiry Commission. And you're right. They focused in this charge on a January 2016 administrative order. It's 4 pages. Anyone can read it. It's very easy to read. And they say that he advocated that the probate judges disobey the U.S. Supreme Court decision. Well, he never said that. In fact, he said the opposite. He said specifically, I cannot give guidance to to the probate judges, because the matter is currently pending before the Alabama Supreme Court, and that court will make a ruling at some point in the future, which it did 2 months later.
Good grief. So even though the basis for the complaint was completely spurious, he gets removed or suspended from the bench without being able to have any due process.
That's exactly right. And so here's the scenario. Southern Poverty Law Center files the complaint based upon this administrative order. And then there's people on the Judicial Inquiry Commission that are in league with the Southern Poverty Law Center. So they issue a charge. Now, it matters now how bogus it is. It doesn't really matter because he automatically is removed from the bench. And then we have to go through the process of litigating it to get him back on the bench. Well, then the Judicial Inquiry Committee or Commission is kind of like a grand jury, if you will. But then after it issues the charge, then it hires the former legal director of the Southern Poverty Law Center to prosecute the Chief Justice. So the Southern Poverty Law Center files the complaint, the GIC issues the charge, then the GIC issues a former legal director of the Southern Poverty Law Center to be the prosecutor in the case. So this is how twisted this system is and how entwined the Southern Poverty Law Center is in this Judicial Inquiry Commission. They can file a complaint, and then no matter how bogus it is, if the GIC doesn't like the judge, they issue the charge, and they're off the bench. So they've not only targeted the Chief Justice, they also now have in their sights another state Supreme Court Justice, Tom Parker.
Oh, man. And the GIC has no jurisdiction to render legal decisions, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you're exactly right. Whenever a Chief Justice issues an administrative order, there is one particular body that has jurisdiction over it, and that is the rest of the other eight justices on the Alabama Supreme Court. In fact, in the past, they've actually exercised that authority. A few years ago, in 2013, there was a financial crisis in Alabama, and the Chief Justice issued an administrative order regarding pay raises and freezing the pay raises. Well, guess what? The other eight justices didn't like that. So they overruled that particular administrative order, and they said, that order applies to everyone except for us. Well, they have the right to do that. That's their authority. That's right. How it's set up.
Right.
The Judicial Inquiry Committee doesn't have the right to do it. They're acting as a super state Supreme Court judge that has the authority over the entire judicial system. That's not their role. In fact, three of the members of this nine-member body are non-lawyers. So they don't even have any training in law, and yet they're now focused on administrative order that is solely focused on law and is solely under the jurisdiction of the Alabama Supreme Court as a whole.
Incredible. Well, there's a lot more to talk about. We're going to do that with Matt Staver from Liberty Counsel discussing this case with Justice Roy Moore of Alabama. We're going to come back on Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. Janet Meffert in today for Tony. Again, our number 866-372-7234. Taking your calls a little later on this hour. We'll be coming back on American Family Radio right after this.
Every day, Christian values are being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy at an alarming rate. What can ordinary Christian citizens do to make their voices heard in an arena that is set on silencing them? FRC is here to help. Every week on the FRC blog, we will publish a question of the week that people like you are asking around the country, along with our answer. Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church, or about any specific value that FRC continues to stand for, whether it be life, marriage and family, or religious liberty. Go to frc.org/contact and enter Question of the Week in the subject line for the chance to be published on our blog. Again, that's frc.org/contact and enter Question of the Week in the subject line. Thank you for standing with us.
President John Adams once said, "Facts are stubborn things." And finding hard facts and data on subjects like marriage and religion can be difficult today. But the Marriage and Religion Research Institute has the solution. Maripedia is an online social science encyclopedia on all matters related to family, marriage, religion, and sexuality. The purpose of Maripedia is to let the data do the talking. By delivering the power of robust social science findings to families, churches, and schools, we intend to change the debate. Meripedia is an important resource for any student, parent, policymaker, reporter, or blogger who wants to become a proactive player in improving society. Visit meripedia.org for the stubborn facts on this faith-affirming research. That's MARRIPEDIA.org. That's MARRIPEDIA.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Janet Mefford in today for Tony Perkins. So glad you could join us. Our number 866-372-7234. We'll be taking your calls right after we finish up with Matt Staver. And this is such an important story. It has to do with Roy Moore, who is the Alabama Chief Justice, suspended because he had this ethics complaint lodged against him by this commission. It's all very complex. But the bottom line, Matt, is that this goes back to the question of whether or not states have the right to make their own laws about marriage, and how the U.S. Supreme Court in the Obergefell decision made the decision for the states. There's so many legal issues here, but give us a broader perspective, if you would, on why this matters so much, especially for Christians and those who want to hold to the natural and normal view of marriage.
Well, I think it really matters for Christians because this particular landscape that has been changed by five people on the U.S. Supreme Court regarding marriage is cultural shifting. It is a cataclysmic shifting of the culture when five people say that the Constitution requires states to recognize same-sex marriage. Not only violates the Constitution, but it also violates natural law and the natural created order and millennia of human history. Moreover, when you say that the whole definition of spouse is changed, think about it in your state statutes. You're talking about hundreds and thousands, frankly, of statutes in every state that are affected by that snap decision by five people. So you can't just simply walk away and say this is a small decision. It changes the landscape. It shreds every part of our domestic law regarding workers' compensation, spousal death benefits, who's a spouse, or distribution of property upon a death to a spouse. Who's a spouse? The statutes define the spouse as someone who's a man or woman in a legal marriage, and it changes everything. Moreover, not only that, it has a direct collision with religious freedom, and that's the case of Kim Davis, where because of her religious conscience, she was thrown in jail for 6 days. Now, to benefit of the Kentucky legislature, they unanimously passed a law in Kentucky that accommodates religious freedom. But North Carolina did the same thing. North Carolina passed a law that accommodated religious freedom, and groups like the ACLU are all up in arms, and they have a lawsuit against it. They don't want anyone's religious freedom and conscience to be accommodated. So this doesn't just affect the florist and the baker and the photographer, not just the clerks. It affects everyone. Everyone is going to be affected by this 5-4 opinion from the Supreme Court, whether it's churches in tax exemption, property tax exemption, use of facilities, performance of weddings, who you can hire, colleges and accreditation, student loans, you name it. And we're going to be affected by it. So I think it's time for people to push back. And I think, frankly, more than marriage being on trial, I think the entire judiciary is on trial. It's about time for people to say, enough is enough, that judges have to operate within their prescribed limited authority. And when they operate outside of it, we've got to push back.
Well, right. And you look at a complaint like this where the Southern Poverty Law Center is involved. And as people well know, the Southern Poverty Law Center likes to go against Christians and call them hate groups like the Family Research Council. This is what it really comes down to, is that if you are seen as some sort of a threat to the agenda that they want to push forward, then they will find a means to make you have to be confronted and possibly lose your job. And that is the overarching problem as well. It's not just a matter of,
that's right,
yeah, if you're a Christian and sometimes this is going to affect you, but also the targeting aspect. That to me is one of the most disturbing parts of this.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They, like in Chief Justice position, they don't want you to be a judge. They don't want you to be the Chief Justice. I think it's in Oregon right now, if you don't do same-sex weddings, then it's an ethical violation for you to be a judge.
Wow.
You know, they don't want you to just simply be silent anymore. They want you to be a participant and a promoter. And if
that's
you will
right.
not promote their same-sex LGBT agenda, then not only will you have to get out of your position, of your profession, you name it, counseling, any area, but you're going to be fined and you're going to be penalized. And that's what this is about with Chief Justice Roy Moore. Why did they come after him? Because his opinions on marriage and the Constitution are well known.
Yes.
He believes in natural marriage like the majority of the American public. He believes in following the Constitution, and the Southern Poverty Law Center hates him.
Right.
So they have people on the inside at the Judicial Inquiry Commission. They know that if they file a complaint, if the JIC issues a charge, no matter how bogus it is, no matter the fact that we'll ultimately win this case, he's automatically removed. And he's been out of office since May. And now we're in the month of August. So, you know, when he was removed, this case came down, this charge came down on a Friday. On Monday, he's locked out of his office. His password is changed. His secretary is taken away. His law clerks are reassigned. And he can't even go to the third floor of the Alabama Supreme Court Judicial Building. I mean, this is just a tragedy. And it's all because of the issue of marriage. That's all it centers around, the issue of marriage. And they want to punish you, and they want to make it so that you cannot even work in your profession if you don't promote their ideology.
Well, I'll tell you what, Matt, I'm so glad that you're fighting on behalf of Justice Moore, and we'll be praying for you as well as for the justice. This is a travesty, and we'll be following this story with great interest. Matt Staver from Liberty Counsel, thank you so much, Matt, for what you do and for being with us today.
Thank you. My pleasure to be with you.
To find out more about Matt Staver, head over to TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.